So if I jump from the floor, you can determine how many centimeters I elevate from the floor. It's an absolute measure. For the EMG, it does not. Why? Because it depends on the specific location near the muscle where I put the EMG. So if I have a region on my skin where there is a little bit more dead skin, the resistance of my skin will be higher. This will affect the reading of the EMG. So it's a not absolute measurement. So we take the maximum amplitude of potential that we see elicited within the lift in the condition of using straps, and we compare it to the maximum potential that is elicited when you don't use it, not using straps. We calculate the difference.
Hi, Francesco. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself.
Thank you, Alex. It's my pleasure to be here today. Thank you for the invitation. So my name is Francesco Travascio, and I'm associate professor at College of Engineering of the University of Miami. I've been conducting research in the field of biomechanics for the past almost 20 years. And one of my interests, obviously, is sports biomechanics. And my preferred sport is weightlifting. So today we are going to talk about weightlifting, I assume, right?
Yes. So the study we'll be talking about is about the use of straps in snatch, and it involves measuring muscle activation. These studies are super, super rare. There may be 3-4 coming a year in weightlifting and with EMG, and there are reasons for that. So let's talk about it. Why these studies are so hard?
Well, they are hard to my, anecdotal evidence, right? My personal experience. This is because generally the handling of the EMG is a quite delicate type topic. It's quite delicate as a type of sensor. And it is routinely used for analysis on nerve conduction and muscular activation in a clinical setting, in hospitals or in clinics. It's less used in the case of sports application, especially when the movements are very explosive, like in weightlifting. What we are trying to measure is the muscular contraction. And obviously, the muscular contraction in weightlifting is very impulsive and explosive. And so this creates a number of problems in terms, very technical problems in terms of adhesion of the device that we are attaching to the muscles to measure. So I don't know if you, I can digress a little bit on the device, how the device is, but essentially it's a little box that probably may weigh a few grams, like 30-40 grams, that contains a receiver. And this receiver sends to our wireless apparatus the signal that is read by electrodes that are applied on the skin of the subject. Essentially, the way it works is whenever we contract a muscle, we want to contract a muscle, we send a signal to our neurons through the muscular fibers. And we fire what we call an action potential, which is an electrical impulse, if you want, but in layman terms. And this activates the control motor unit that changes the electrical potential of the cells, of the muscular cells. And this change in electrical potential produces a spike into the voltage, that the electrical potential that we can read on the skin in proximity of the muscle that is contracted. So by looking at how large is this electrical potential, we understand how many cells contracted and contributed to this electrical potential. The larger is the amplitude of this electrical potential, means more cells are participating, more muscular activation is occurring in that specific time frame. So by looking at different exercises or conditions and comparing the electrical potentials, the amplitude of these electrical potentials associated to these different activities, we can determine whether or not there was more muscular activation in doing a certain type of exercise rather than another. Okay, so this is a very simple to say, but quite complicated actually in doing it and in practical terms, because obviously these devices, like I said, they're applied on the body, and the electrodes that we apply to receive the signal have some sort of a adhesive gel. However, you know, when you do sports, you tend to sweat, and obviously the sweat causes problems of adhesion. On top of it, we have these explosive movements that contract the muscles and move the body with very high accelerations. And this essentially represents a big problem in having these sensors to be attached to the human body while they're doing these activities. And we learned in the very hard way, because in our first pilot experience, experiments, we were seeing these sensors flying in a training hall everywhere. And they're also very expensive. So we were very concerned. So we started to learn, you know, from our mistakes and try to find mitigations. So one of the mitigations was actually wrapping around the muscle with gauzes, put the gauzes not too tight, obviously, but tight enough not to prevent, you know, the departure of these devices, using athletic tape. And we used to put our athletes during the training in front of big fans, so all the sweat could dry as much as possible, try to minimize all the possible effects that would cause this loss of sensors. It was pretty funny, but we had a lot of fun. Really.
All right, so that's EMG in general. Now, in this study, what did you try to find out and how did you set up the experiments?
Yeah, so what we were trying to, we know that using the straps by empirical evidence, anecdotal evidence, or even by other studies conducted in other weightlifting sports have certain benefits. For instance, there is a lot written on the use of straps in deadlift, right? So the first thing, certainly, the fact that we're using straps means that we don't have to grip so hard the barbell. So we can spare the use of our forearm muscles. And this turns out to be an advantage when you want to deload your forearm muscles. And studies on deadlift have shown that actually sparing these muscles allows you focusing more on using other muscles, like muscles of the back of the entire posterior chain. Unfortunately, there is not very much done on weightlifting on the use of straps. So we were very interested for two reasons. One, because for once, common sense, right, type of logic. If I use the straps, I'm going to deload the forearm, so it's going to be beneficial for my forearms in a way, and maybe I can focus more on activating other muscles or other patterns of motion. But there was no quantitative evidence, so this motivated us to undertake the study. And our hypothesis was that the use of straps from one side could reduce the muscular activation in the forearms, and from the other side could also promote enhanced activation of the posterior chain.
Could you tell us, who did you recruit for the study? So who were the participants?
Yeah, so this was another challenge because obviously, you know, you have to find people who are willing to, very brave people who love so much the sport and love so much the science that are willing to go through all this. So essentially the problem is that one of the tricky parts of the EMGs, this is very important to understand why it's difficult to find these people. Okay, one of the tricky parts of the EMGs is that they read this electrical potential, right, that is developed by our body, our muscle. But this electrical potential is affected by the electrical resistance of the skin and the muscles and the fat layers in that specific region where you apply the EMG. This means that for the same contraction on my bicep, I may read different electrical potentials if I move over a couple of centimeters away the electrode. So if I want to have a real comparative measurement when I use the straps or when I don't use the straps, once I apply the electrode, I have to keep the electrodes always in the same position when I use the straps or not. So we couldn't call that subjects on another day. On one day you do it with straps, on the other day you do it without straps. It had to be done all at once. So the athletes were supposed to go through a ramp from a 60% up to a 80-85% of lifting, sequences of lifting without straps, and then repeat it again with the straps or in a randomized order. Some of them started with straps, some of them without straps. So in reality, it's very disruptive of their lifting routine. So we had problems at finding those athletes that were preparing competitions, obviously had more problems in participating because that would have been very disruptive for their training routine. Fortunately, we found a sufficient large number of athletes from a local gym, Team Soul Miami, amazing people who really wanted to go through all this ordeal. And we actually were able to complete the study. We used the population of sub-elite athletes that had competed in regional and national level. The requirement was that they would train at least 3 days per week. Obviously, all of them train at least 5 days a week. And obviously, they didn't have any muscular injury that prevented them from executing the movement in the way it's supposed to be executed.
All right. How many did you have the participants? How many?
We had a total of 12 participants, which gave us enough power for our statistical analysis.
And they were all males, I think, were they?
Yeah.
Okay, 12 males. All right, now, this is an EMG study, so we are measuring muscle activation. Do you want to say a little bit more about what kind of outputs did you get in your data? You know, like when we test, for example, because this is something my viewers will be familiar with, testing jump, for example. So if you do it on force places, you will have forces. You can calculate, you can see velocity, you can see jump height. So these would be the variables people would be more familiar with. With EMG, what do you get? What do you work with?
Yeah. So again, the EMGs are very particular. So like I said, because we are looking at the muscular contraction that translates into electrical potentials, we are looking at the peak of these electrical potentials that are elicited when there is a muscular contraction. Okay, so what we are actually looking at in a quantity that is a voltage that is in millivolt generally is the order of magnitude. And like I said before, the measure itself is not an absolute measurement. So if I jump from the floor, you can determine how many centimeters I elevate from the floor. It's an absolute measure. For the EMG, it does not. Why? Because it depends on the specific location near the muscle where I put the EMG. So if I have a region on my skin where there is a little bit of more dead skin, the resistance of my skin will be higher. This will affect the reading of the EMG. So it's a not absolute measurement. So we take the maximum amplitude of potential that we see elicited within the lift in the condition of using straps, and we compare it to the maximum potential that is elicited when you don't use it, not using straps. We calculate the difference. Okay.
And you do it per muscle.
For all the muscles that we studied. And this is, so obviously, you know, you would like to measure everything if possible, right? But again, you know, we are in the real world. Like I said, it's quite cumbersome and it's also quite uncomfortable for the athletes. So what we had to do is to measure only those muscles on the dominant side. So if the athlete was right-handed, we measure only 8 muscles on the right side or on the left side if the person was left-handed. The muscles that we studied were flexor carpi radialis, the biceps brachii, lateral triceps, medial deltoid, vastus lateralis, biceps femoris, and middle trapezius, and the latissimus dorsi. So we had essentially muscles from the upper limbs, shoulder, the back, and some of the posterior chain. Those that are in the back are obviously even more challenging because people tended to sweat on the back, and it was very difficult to wrap all around the chest these gauzes. Like I said, these were the challenges that we faced. And yeah, so we compared essentially for each muscle, we compared these electrical potentials. Obviously, as we know, snatch has several phases. They start with the first pull and the second pull, and then the catch, and then the squat. We monitored the activation of these muscles throughout all these phases. But obviously, we were more interested into the first initial phases of pull because it's where all the major muscular contraction occurred and where actually the straps seem to have, we hypothesize that the straps can have an effect. Obviously, there is not much effect the strap can have in the catch position or in the overhead squat. You know, it's just that they are not meant to improve that part. They are meant to improve the phase of pulling. So that's why we focus mostly on the face of pulling.
Awesome. So what you get at the end is the trace of the muscle activation, so the potentials.
Yes. So what you get is actually the trend of activation, spikes of potential throughout all the entire movement. And together with the DMGs, we had cameras that at the same time monitored the movement of the athlete. So we could determine when a certain type of spike occurred and that spike was associated to the first pull or the second pull or any other phase of the game. So we separated, our analysis was comparing with or without the straps, each muscle in each phase of the lift, with a major focus on the first two phases of the
lift. That's a lot of work. And let's not forget that each signal has to be processed and filtered and so on.
I guess that for an engineer, because we executed this with my PhD students in engineering. This was, the signal processing was not probably the hardest part of it. Now, you want to use the EMGs. I used to say you want to use the EMGs. The EMGs are nice. They can give you a lot of information, but you want to use the EMGs only when you definitely have to use the EMGs because there is no other way, right? If you can try to bypass, I'm happy to go. happy to do that. We wrapped up twice from 60 to 80% with starting. I mean, we had some sort of a mixed progression of stepwise and linear progression of the weights. So having more repetitions at lower percentages and then executing singles, three singles at 80% without straps and three singles at 80% with straps.
Are we ready for the results?
Sure. So we found very interesting results. We found that we had a significant decrease in the muscular activation of the forearms, up in between 15 to 20% less activation when using the straps. This also reflected a little bit in the lesser activation of the biceps, although those were very, very small, around 5%. But interestingly enough, we saw an increase in the activation of the deltoid and the latissimus dorsi. They probably had the largest increase of activation when using the straps. And in the upper body. And even more interestingly, we found an increase in the activation of the quad on the vastus lateralis that went up to 40% in some cases. 40% more activating when using lifting straps as compared to non-using lifting straps. So in a way, we sort of validated our hypothesis that the use of lifting straps not only benefits the deload of the forearms, but also helps engaging more all the other muscles that are involved into the exercise. And I think that probably, I would say that the most important message to me, in my opinion, is that the use of straps should be recommended in general for general use in strength and condition. So we know that Olympic lifts are also used in other sports for strength and conditioning. And in other sports, athletes may not need to gain the level of proficiency in technique like an Olympic weightlifter. And they generally focus more on pulls rather than executing the entire movement. Or maybe they power snatch. So at that point, I think that it would be very beneficial for them. They could get more out of the exercise if they would use straps, because they definitely don't have to train their grip strength like a weightlifter would have to, but they surely have to train their lower limbs and their back.
And not just the observation, but when you use straps, you may load heavier, which means higher weight for the exercise for the athlete who is doing the exercise. So you can load athletes more effectively using straps because the grip is not restricting how much they can use.
Absolutely. There are several studies that have shown this is in deadlift, that obviously by not being bound on the way on the amount you lift by your grip strength, you can actually lift more. And this is also the reason why straps are not allowed into competitions of weightlifting, right? Because we know that they have actually a beneficial effect in giving you the opportunity to lift higher weights. But now we measure, right? Now we have a quantitative data to associate to this probably common sense, obvious or empirical, observation.
You know what goes through my head? How much more could I lift in the snatch if I would be using straps?
That would be a very interesting question. I have no idea of how much, but it would be interesting to test. Would be very interesting.
Because you say, I'm maybe guessing now, but latissimus dorsi, you said around up to 20%. So if this is that.
It was probably more the latissimus dorsi. I think it was probably in some cases, up to 30%.
If the muscle activation is changed so much for some of the muscles, because 30% is huge, huge change. How it will influence the loading, and because the patterns of activation are changed, will the technique have to change? Will the very proficient wave lifters, so the elite who can do the most without straps, will they struggle to do straps, or they can do more? I don't know.
Well, I've seen some YouTube videos of elite weightlifters that when they use the straps, they do something really impressive. They go to weights that are really, really impressive. What really struck me is that we had cases in which the contraction of the vastus lateralis went up to 40% more. I mean, talking about a major effect. But I mean, that did not happen in all the subjects.
So interesting. I think you need to run another study, Francesco.
Oh, absolutely. You are giving me a lot of ideas. And yes, certainly. We are very interested into conducting studies in sports biomechanics. And obviously, weightlifting is my passion. And my students, I'm trying to involve more and more my students also in the practice of the sport. I'm bringing them to the dark side, yeah?
Yes, to the dark side. Excellent. Well, going back to my question with how much more the lifter is able to lift with the straps, if we would know how much, then we can calculate, okay, if I want this snatch on the platform, this is where I would have to go to with straps or try to overload, I don't know, face by face or, you know, different methods. But that is
a very good question for a coach, right? And generally, when I've trained, I always pull with straps all the time. And I may use straps during, you know, my routine, but only when I am quite far away from competition. So when I'm getting closer to competitions, I rather not using them, because I understand that there might be a change in the technique or the way you approach the lift. And also you want to still keep your, in a way, your grip strength, in a way. So it's definitely an excellent question for a coach.
I have one more question about EMG and weight classes. So will the EMG signal or the reading differ depending on how much fat tissue the athlete will have? Because lower weight class athletes tend to be a little bit leaner than super heavy athletes, for example, where there's no limit on the weight, body weight. So they usually will hold a little bit more fat tissue because they can.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Again, I mean, the fat tissue has an effect on the overall impedance, the electrical resistance, if you want, in many layman terms, of your body. So obviously, including a fat layer may change in comparison the amplitude of the potential. But again, we have to remember that the measurement of an EMG is not an absolute measure. Okay, so we have always to compare to something. So in this particular case of this study, we compared the same exercise executed with a garment and not a garment. Okay, if I want to just study what is the activation of a muscle for doing snatch in general without comparing with anything, obviously I have my reading of the electrical potential. This by itself doesn't mean anything, again, because it's the fat tissue, the way you apply it. So what we generally do as a comparison, we calculate the maximum voluntary contraction of the muscle, which is a baseline measurement. Essentially, we have techniques to stimulate the muscle, the specific muscle that we want to target, we want to monitor, to its maximum contraction. At this maximum contraction, we read the potential. And this electrical potential would be the baseline, would be the maximum effort that you can possibly put into the contraction of the muscle. Then we execute the exercise and we read another electrical potential. And then we refer this electrical potential to its max. So we know that during that exercise, I used 60%, 70%, 90% of my maximum capability of contracting that muscle. So if we are looking at weight classes, yes, there is a difference in body composition. That's for sure. That's for sure. It's undeniable. Does this affect the reading of the EMG? Not really, because it's a relative measurement. We always have an internal comparison. Then it depends. It boils down to the sensitivity of your EMG, if it's capable of capturing that potentials, and generally they are used even with large body mass index people.
So pretty sensitive sensors.
Yes.
Let's maybe try to bring it all together. So 2-3 points, maybe what you want coaches to get out of this study, main points.
Well, I would say that in the first place, we showed with quantitative data that using lifting straps has a beneficial effect on deloading the core arms. So it can be specifically indicated when we have problem of fatigue, for instance, for the 4 hours. The second point that we found was that obviously together with the deloading of the forearms, the use of straps also have a beneficial effect in increasing the activation of the muscles of the back and the lower ribs. So in view of building a program of strength and conditioning for the athlete, whether the athlete is a weightlifter or an athlete of a different specialty, it could be an option, the use of the straps, in order to enhance the muscle recovery. But obviously the last point is we always have to keep in mind that weightlifting as a sport is done at a competitive level is done without straps. So we cannot abuse it, right? At some point we have to go back to, you know, the regular lift.
Excellent. Okay, two more questions to finish. The first one is, which is your favorite lift?
That's a tough question, because it's always love and hate. You know, it depends on my performances are very alternating. So I would say that definitely snatch is my favorite lift. I think in general it's my favorite. Are you asking for the lift or the lifter?
The lift. Yeah. Which one is?
Yes, I think that the snatch is probably really the most representative type of lift of weightlifting. It really encompasses the explosiveness, but also the mobility, the capability of a person to the agility and the mobility of a person. And also, if you want, the grace of a person in the movements. It's fascinating.
It is.
That's true. It's very well executed. It's really fascinating.
All right. Do you have your favorite lifter?
Oh, many. But since probably we are talking about snatch, I have to say that I always fall in love with the way Alexei Toropi snatches. He is extremely graceful and powerful at the same time. And as his technique that is just, I really hypnotized when I see lifting.
Okay, last question is, if people want to see what you're up to, what your research is at the moment, where should they go online?
Okay, so we have our X account with all our updates, and the handler, Biomech with capital B and with an H in the end, underscore capital U, capital M, as University of Miami.
Awesome.
And then you can see all our updates, and you also have the links to the website of our lab.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Francesco. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Bye.